A trial date is set for a woman accused of killing her husband in Glacier Park. Good evening, I'm Madeline Beck.
And I'm Connor Ballantyne, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
Capitol reporter Dan Boyce tells us about a reward intended to halt the illegal introduction of fish. And in our feature interview, reporter Katrin Fry talks with the head of mental health program for seniors about Montana's aging population's mental health needs. The trial for a Kalispell newlywed charged with pushing her husband off a cliff in Glacier National Park is scheduled to start in December. U.S. District Judge Don Malloy of Missoula denied requests by attorneys for both sides to hold the first-degree murder trial for 22-year-old Jordan Lynn Graham in February. They had sought more time to prepare. Graham is charged with killing 25-year-old Cody Lee Johnson during an argument on July 7th, 8 days after they were married. Malloy ruled today that starting the trial December 9th guaranteed a speedy trial for Graham and for Johnson's family. Charging documents say Graham had expressed doubts about her marriage and planned to confront Johnson about those concerns on the night he died.
And in other news from around the state, Western Timber Companies have gone to court to lift the logging ban on national forests due to the government shutdown, arguing the government has no authority under timber sale contracts to force loggers to stop working. The lawsuit was filed yesterday in U.S. District Court in Medford against the U.S. Forest Service and the U.S. Bureau of Land Management. It argues that direction from the Office of Management and Budget does not require suspension of operations on a federal contract so long as direct supervision is not critical to the contractor's work. Tom Parton of the American Forest Resource Council says the shutdown is hurting working families and eventually will lead to some mills shutting down for lack of logs. The Forest Service had no immediate comment on the lawsuit.
The Chippewa Cree tribe has declared a financial disaster due to the federal government shutdown. Spokeswoman Wade Cauliflower said today if the budget stalemate in Congress isn't resolved by Thursday, the tribal government will completely shut down. The exception will be the Rocky Boys Reservation's police department and health clinic, which will be fully staffed. Cauliflower says senior citizens will receive meal deliveries, propane, and firewood as the weather turns colder. But nearly all other tribal offices and services will close after Thursday, with essential workers on call in case of emergencies. Cauliflower says the tribe already has cut back hours and furloughed staff with federal money for tribal programs cut off during the shutdown. He says tribal members are holding their breaths in hopes a deal will be reached.
Montana tax authorities are seeking $3.4 million from a Wyoming coal company that used a practice under scrutiny by federal officials in valuing the coal it sold. The state says taxes, interest, and penalties are owed on sales between 2005 and 2007 from the Spring Creek mine near Decker, one of the largest coal mines in the U.S. District Judge Jeffrey Sherlock held a hearing today in a lawsuit Gillette-based Cloud Peak Energy filed to block the state's tax claim. Attorney Robert Sterup says state officials improperly calculated the taxes owed on Cloud Peak's coal sales to two affiliated companies. Sherlock did not make an immediate ruling. The Interior Department is investigating whether the practice of sales to affiliated companies was abused to determine royalties on coal shipped to Asia.
The Montana chapter of Trout Unlimited is offering $10,000 in reward money for information on illegal fish introductions. State wildlife officials say illegal dumping of non-native or previously unintroduced fish species is on the rise. Capitol reporter Dan Boyce says Trout Unlimited is partnering with the State Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks to distribute the reward money.
It is one of the most irresponsible things that somebody could do to Montana's fisheries.
Montana Trout Unlimited Conservation Director Mark Ogunis. Fish, Wildlife, and Parks workers recently discovered smallmouth bass in Sealy Lake, which the department says is the result of someone illegally dumping them in there. Smallmouth bass are predators and have a greater ability to move up and down streams than other fish.
So it's super concerning from the perspective of the Blackfoot River, not to mention Clearwater River, and all the way downstream to the Clark Fork.
Anytime a new fish is introduced to a waterway, that species has the potential to seriously disrupt the ecological balance in that water. The new fish may be able to outcompete and really hurt existing fish species. Fish introduction is far from new. Many of Montana's most iconic fish, like brown and rainbow trout, walleye, they were brought here from somewhere else, decades or generations ago.
The difference between then and now is that we have very clear understanding of ecologically what those illegal introductions will do.
The state says at least 250 waters have been impacted by so-called bucket biologists illegally dumping fish. walleye in Noxon Reservoir, crappie in waters around Kalispell, northern pike in Pelican Point Pond, the list goes on. And Augenes says of the 500 or so documented illegal introductions, a full quarter of those have occurred just in the last decade.
We are getting more illegal introductions in more waters across more of Montana than we've ever seen in the past.
And Fish, Wildlife, and Parks is not sure why that is.
No question, though, that it's increased.
Spokesman Ron Ossheim.
It potentially compromises what's a one-of-a-kind fishery literally in the world.
Trout Unlimited is negotiating an agreement with FWP to make the $10,000 in reward money available through FWP's TIP-MONT program. That's the hotline for reporting poaching and other wildlife-related law violations. Mark Augenes with Trout Unlimited hopes the extra reward money will help deter illegal introductions.
When you look at it in terms of the lost opportunities or the costs to eradicate those species, $10,000 is a very important investment.
Augenes says Trout Unlimited is working with other angling groups such as Walleyes Unlimited to possibly increase the $10,000 reward cash. TU and FWP are working out the details now, how that reward money would be split up.
But the way that we envision it is that if somebody is convicted for illegally introducing a species into Montana waterways, we are absolutely okay with them spending all $10,000 on one conviction.
Right now, those caught illegally introducing fish into Montana waters face a potential $1,000 fine and 6 months in jail. I'm Dan Boyce reporting at the Capitol.
U.S. Representative Steve Daines' new fundraising totals show he has more than $1 million on hand as he considers a run for the U.S. Senate. Daines' totals released today for the most recent quarter show he has taken in $640,000 as interest has grown in his possible Senate candidacy. So far, he has spent little of the money. The Republican has said he is considering running for the first open Senate seat in the state since the 1970s. U.S. Senator Max Baucus has announced he is retiring at the end of 2014. Republicans expect Daines to run. Former Republican State Senator Corey Stapleton has switched his Senate campaign to a run for Daines' House seat. Stapleton reported today that he has raised a total of $300,000 so far.
Republican state legislator Matt Rosendale says his campaign for the U.S. House will champion conservative ideals. Rosendale announced today that he will be running for the U.S. House after also first considering a U.S. Senate run. Republicans expect current U.S. Representative Steve Daines to run for the Senate seat being vacated by Max Baucus in 2014. The race for the Republican nomination in the House could be crowded. Former Senator Corey Stapleton of Billings is already running and others are considering it. Rosendale said he will run against, quote, drones, death panels, and national debt, end quote. The Glendive rancher said he thinks the House Republicans need to keep forcing the issue in the argument over the debt ceiling in order to get rid of Obamacare and reduce spending.
Many people live in western Montana for its rural setting and wildlife, but sometimes that wildlife can get a bit close for comfort. Such is the case in the Missoula area, where Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks has fielded several recent phone calls about mountain lions, or perhaps one very busy lion, spotted prowling around residential neighborhoods. Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Public Information Officer Vivica Krauser says the reports seem to be focused on Missoula's upper Miller Creek neighborhoods, all the way from Rodeo Road to where lower Miller Creek meets Highway 93.
The number of reports concentrated in a particular area is a little unusual. You know, this time of year is a time where you'd expect to see lions moving around. And there's a lot of deer around town and around these neighborhoods. So to see some lion traffic through there, maybe pursuing some of those deer, not real unusual. But to have that many reports in a concentrated time is something that definitely makes us pause.
Krauser says wildlife officials aren't sure, but suspect they're getting multiple reports of one or two cats. Regardless, she says mountain lions prefer as little attention as possible.
So you're going to see more activity under the cover of darkness, or that those dawn dusk hours is when you tend to get more reports. Not out of the realm of possibility to see a lion in the daylight, but more often than not, they're traveling at night.
Krauser says FWP is spending extra time in the southwestern Missoula area.
And just trying to get out there and know the ground a little bit better and have a presence in this part of town to talk with folks. And the other thing that we are doing is if we get a report of a lion and we can get out there right away and get on the trail, that's something that we want to do. One of our employees has a couple of dogs that he uses, bloodhounds, to track lions. And if we can track a lion that's not leaving this area and remove the lion, that's what we'll do in this instance. And with lions, what you have to do is remove them permanently. They're not like bears where you can trap them and relocate them. So if we were able to track this lion in the southern part of town, we would kill it.
Because they eat only meat, lions may target house pets, livestock, and even people. Krauser notes it's a fine line between being aware of your surroundings and the wildlife we share the land with and going overboard with paranoia. Still, she says given the increased number of reports, it's a good idea to walk small children to the bus stop and generally be extra attentive. If you do happen to come face-to-face with a mountain lion, she advises making loud noise and doing what you can to make yourself look as big as possible. And if you're actually attacked, which is a remote possibility, you fight back. In bear attacks, it's best to respond passively if you have no other choice. Krauser says bear spray is an excellent deterrent in both cases.
A draft forest management plan is recommending taking more than 25,000 acres of Scotchman Parks area in northern Idaho and Montana, part of a federally protected wilderness. The recommendation is part of a draft record of a decision developed for the Kootenai and Panhandle National Forests. The Bonner County Daily Bee reports a new draft updates the existing 1987 plan and will guide management of the forests for the next 15 years. The plan recommended 23,900 acres of the Scotchman Parks area to be designated as a wilderness. The new plan simply adds 2,000 more acres to that total. The draft plan and accompanying environmental study were released for public review last month. The forest is accepting public comments on the proposal until late November.
The Missoula City Council is exploring adding Salish language words to signs directing people to different landmarks and locations in the city. City Council members met with members of the Salish Pondere Culture Committee yesterday and asked them to help identify areas in Missoula that have cultural significance to the Bitterroot Salish people and help in getting the language correct. Missoula plans to install new directional and interpretive signs to replace what is now a clutter of signs at some intersections. City officials say the citywide project could cost up to $1.2 million. Culture Committee Director Tony Incahola said yesterday the bilingual signs will help people understand where they live, the history of the area, and what's beneath all the concrete.
Renowned British historian Andrew Roberts is in Missoula to give tonight's annual Swanberg Lecture in Military History at the University of Montana. Andrew Roberts has written several critically praised books about World War II and will be speaking tonight about his belief that Hitler lost the war because of his fanatical Nazi ideology.
Had he not been a Nazi, he might not have lost. A Moltke, say, or a Bismarck, or one of the great late 19th century Germans who weren't obsessed with ideology and racism and fascism and all those other bits of ideological baggage that Hitler brought with him, could have actually pulled off that war.
Robert's talk on why Hitler lost the World War II begins at 8 o'clock tonight at the Denison Theater on the UM campus. We'll have the feature interview with Roberts tomorrow during Montana Evening Edition.
State wildlife officials have killed an elk in the Ovanda area after it became too comfortable and even aggressive around people. The elk was filmed stopping traffic on Montana Highway 200 and running after a couple on a motorcycle on October 3rd. Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Warden Captain Joe Jackwith of Missoula said today that wardens had killed the three-year-old elk before officials saw the video, but said what they saw confirmed the agency's decision. Jackwith says FWP had received reports about the bull elk harassing pets and hanging around houses in the Ovando area. On October 9th, a FWP employee responded to a complaint that the elk was on private property and being aggressive toward people and damaging property. The FWP employee shot the elk. The meat was donated to a food bank.
A Montana rancher says more than 130 heifers have been donated to South Dakota ranchers who lost cattle in this month's devastating blizzard and need to replenish their herds. Ty Linger of Miles City set up the Heifers for South Dakota Facebook page in an effort to get ranchers in surrounding states to pledge cows to those who lost at least 25% of their herd. He tells the Black Hills Pioneer that he's close to being established as a 501c3 nonprofit organization and has 17 branches set up in Montana and other states to help with the effort. He also set up the website helpforsouthdakota.com so people can also send monetary donations.
Montana's population is aging, and the number of people aged 65 and older living in Montana is expected to keep growing. A report from the State Department of Health and Human Services says in the year 2000, Montana ranked 14th in the nation in the percentage of its population aged 65 or older. That rank is expected to jump to 5th by the year 2025. Connecting this population with the necessary health services is part of an effort that brings together several organizations for seniors. In tonight's feature, Flathead reporter Katrin Fry talks with Jennifer Allen of North Valley Hospital's Embrace Health. Embrace Health is a mental health program specifically designed for people aged 55 and older and is one of the organizations on the Flathead's Senior Wellness Committee. The committee first organized to identify and respond to the biggest issues the area's seniors are facing.
Well, it's really quite an exciting move. The Area Agency on Aging has an advisory council. And as part of some of the research that the advisory council was doing, a committee broke off to take a look specifically at wellness for seniors. And part of this was out of an interest of one of the prior county commissioners, Dale Lauman, who was particularly interested in mental health for seniors. He was very worried about isolated seniors who couldn't get out, struggled to find the resources that they needed. In addition, in some of the surveys that have been accomplished in our county, there's a strong interest throughout all the age groups in there being enough wellness programs for everyone to keep costs down and to keep quality of life high. So this committee has done some work in surveying needs specific to the older population, and frankly, wellness needs come right up at the top.
The population here in Flathead County, I believe, is an aging population, is that?
Yes, we have, of course, the entire United States population is aging, but we're doing so. We have a pretty good population size in older adults, and they tend to be active because we're a resort location. We have a lot of interest in this area in our population.
Well, and activity has to be good for mental health, correct?
It's absolutely good for mental health. And then we have a few things in Montana that make mental health a little tougher. The lack of light in winter is hard for some of us. The snow, if you're already struggling to get out and about because of a depression, can make it a little worse. Flip side of it is we have the beauties that help as well. So,
and so with this wellness committee, you folks put together a one-page survey.
Yes, the Wellness Committee has been working on surveying as many seniors as we can rustle up at various events. We did the survey at the most recent senior picnic, the annual picnic that the Area Agency on Aging provides. We're going to be doing the survey, offering it as well as our upcoming wellness screening event. And really our goal is to help gather information for our community about what really are the needs of the senior population. It's been interesting already. We're taking a look at, we're asking persons to say, what are your physical concerns? What are your financial concerns? Your mental health concerns? Are you able to get activities? Lots of different things surfacing up about needs out in the community.
What are some of the things that you're hearing?
Well, we had anticipated that depression would be an issue for the older population, and it is for at least 5 to 10% of the population being concerned that they have at least minor to moderate concerns about depression. And we're finding, of course, that finances are huge, ability to get out of the house and have adequate transportation are big issues as well.
And so with this information that you're collecting, that you continue collecting, what is it that you're kind of hoping to do, finding that depression is really topping the list?
Well, we're hoping, as always, that these are supports for continuing to develop programming that meets everyone's needs. One of the most difficult things about healthcare in general is there is never one program that meets every need, but rather a real need to build a whole continuum of services. And that really, you research these things in part to help your community understand where you need to be spending your short resources.
And then there's going to be the screening is kind of part of it that's coming up on October 29th. Tell me about the screening.
Well, we're really excited about it because it's the first time that the committee has moved into action. And that's always a lot of fun, making that move from asking questions to helping to solve something. And one of the biggest choices of this committee was we wanted to screen in order to learn to do preventative care. And so there's a number of different agencies getting together, all putting their time together in order to screen in a number of different areas. We're holding this on Tuesday, October 29th from noon until 2. It's at the Kalispell Senior Center, which is 403 2nd Avenue West. And we're also hoping to be able to provide some good screening in areas that are less common in some other screenings. So, for instance, there's some cognitive screenings that will be going on through Eagle View West Life Care Planning. We're going to do a variety of mental health screenings from North Valley Embrace Health. There's some balance and fall risk assessments from the retreat at Buffalo Hills and some nutrition screenings from Home Options.
So who do you hope comes?
Oh, anybody can come. We're hoping that lots of persons will come and get some good door prizes.
But if people have specific questions, this might be a place for them to come and find out.
It absolutely would be a good place. We'll have agency area on aging present as well. Their information and assistance persons will be there to help, including setting up appointments for Medicare counseling, which, of course, for the time of the year, that's really timely. And most importantly, everyone there doing the screenings will have information about where to go if the screening identifies any kind of issue or problem. And that's the biggest thing. If we screen, we want to get someone connected to the help they need.
And then with this idea of geriatric depression is one of the things you're screening for here, and it's kind of a headline item. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to me about how that, you know, differs from the general header of depression?
One of the things that sometimes happens is that persons have a feeling that because we're older that we're just somehow doomed to be depressed. And so if we're older and become depressed, we may seem to think that we will feel there's nothing we can do. And in fact, it's exactly the opposite. Depression is treatable no matter the age of the individual. We're somewhat more vulnerable as older persons because as we age, we may accumulate loss. We may accumulate loss of function. We may struggle with financial stressors and family stressors and physical stressors. But in fact, the same tools that we use to help with depression in younger individuals works wonderfully for older individuals. And what I'm enjoying the most about the North Valley Embrace program is we are helping people feel better. Just today, we graduated someone who's not depressed anymore, and that makes us very happy.
Well, thank you. I've been speaking with Jennifer Allen, the program director for North Valley Hospitals Embrace Health.
The free senior health and wellness screenings take place at the Kalispell Senior Center on Tuesday, October 29th from noon to 2.
And now for tonight's forecast. West of the Continental Divide, tonight should be partly cloudy with lows in the 20s. Tomorrow expect mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain and highs in the mid-40s to lower 50s. Central Montana should expect some partly cloudy skies tonight, lows 30 to 35 degrees, and tomorrow, cloudy skies and rain and mountain snow, and the highs should be in the 40s. For southwest Montana tonight, expect mostly clear skies, lows 25 to 30 degrees. Tomorrow, look for increasing clouds and a chance of rain and snow. Highs should be 40 to 50 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Sterling Holy White Mountain.
Walk into any law library in this country and peruse the wall of U.S. Code, that record of congressional statutes, and among the 51 volumes there you will find titles such as The Congress, Agriculture, Railroads, Minerals and Mining, War and National Defense, all subjects common and particular enough to the U.S. that no one would think twice about their presence. But among these volumes you will also find one titled Indians, Title 25 to be exact. There is a checklist that determines whether or not you are to be considered an Indian in the eyes of the federal government. In descending order of importance, they include whether or not you are an enrolled member of a tribe, services received that are made available only to Indians, reception of benefits available only through tribal affiliation, social recognition through residence on a reservation, and social recognition via participation in Indian social life. Just to simplify, here are a few practical examples of what those checklist items do or could refer to in descending order, of course. Do you meet blood quantum requirements for your respective tribe? Have you ever received services from Indian Health Service? Have you ever received a per capita check from a tribe? Are you recognized as being an Indian by a reservation community while living on that reservation? And have you participated in ceremonies on that reservation? If you said yes to any of these questions, then you just might be an Indian. The phrase descending order is more important than it might seem at first glance. For example, say Joe Harrison from Kalispell, Montana, who has no tribal ancestry, has helped put up Sundance lodges on the Rosebud Reservation in South Dakota. While that means he meets the criteria for the last item on the checklist, that doesn't mean he's an Indian in the eyes of the law. Let's say, however, that Joe has lived on the Rosebud Reservation his whole life. And let's say he's generally accepted as a member of the community. He's grown up there. His friends are Lakota. He uses English the way Lakota from that part of the world use English. And let's say he participates in Lakota ceremonies there. But wait, just to point out how strange this problem of legally defining an Indian can get, and just how antithetical the law can be to local cultural definitions of belonging. Let's say Joe speaks Lakota. He grew up next door to a friend whose grandpa is a fluent speaker, and Joe learned the language from him. Despite the fact that Joe has pale skin and blonde hair and blue eyes, it would still be very difficult for anyone with any intelligence to say he was not, for all intents and purposes, Lakota. But because Joe has no Lakota ancestry, a.k.a. he has no so-called Indian blood quantum, in the eyes of the law, Joe is simply an American citizen who happens to live on the reservation. So let's change this up again. Say Joe does have tribal ancestry. Say he is everything we already said he was, the blue eyes and the blonde hair and everything. But let's also say he's an enrolled tribal member. That is, he meets his tribe blood quantum requirements. We'll ignore for now that blood quantum is based on 19th century European racial theory, a theory that was developed in large part to justify the mistreatment, to put it lightly, of indigenous peoples around the globe. We'll also ignore for now the fact that blood quantum has no basis in any kind of contemporary scientific reality. What matters right now is that Joe is enrolled, which means legally he is considered an Indian in the eyes of the federal government, and all the benefits and complications of being recognized as such are available to him. This also means, for what it's worth, he can vote in tribal elections, something an unenrolled Indian can't do. Now let's shift again. Let's say Joe's lived in Seattle his whole life and is an enrolled member of a tribe in Montana. But let's also say the only criteria he meets on the above list are that of being enrolled and that of having received tribal benefits, such as a per capita check from a tribal casino. And for the purposes of this illustration, we'll say he not only has no relationship to the reservation where he's enrolled, he's never been there, and has no plans of ever doing so. But in the eyes of the law, Joe's a legal Indian despite having nothing to do with the tribe that acts as the foundation for his legal identity. Now let's imagine one last scenario. Let's say Joe meets every criteria but that of being an enrolled member. He lives on the reservation, he is accepted by and participates in community life, and maybe he's even received certain benefits that are available to unenrolled tribal members who live there. But here's the catch. Because he is not enrolled, he cannot vote, making him and others like him on reservations the only U.S.-born citizens who can't participate in their local political process. Joe, in this last scenario, from a legal standpoint, is a quasi-Indian at best. And unless he commits one of 13 major crimes that fall under federal jurisdiction on reservations, he's never really going to be an Indian, not legally, not according to the federal government, and usually the state. But if he does commit one of those crimes on a reservation, say, for example, he murders a federally recognized Indian, or burns down the tribal headquarters, then the federal government would be more than happy to try him in federal court as an Indian. It might seem like an extreme course of action, to finally be seen as what you've always been, but you know, a guy's got to do what a guy's got to do. I'm Sterling Holy White Mountain. Thanks for listening.
Sterling Holy White Mountain is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Connor Ballantyne.
And I'm Madeline Beck. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.